You're listening to The Stone Tapes with Sam Stone, David J. Howe, Patricia H. Ash, George Mann and Robin Pierce. A show which sheds a little slice of geek sunshine into the ether.
Thank you. And welcome to the land of confusion, the Stone Tapes.
I'm very confused. I'm very confused because we're nearly all here.
We are nearly all here. We've got with us in the studio, David J. Howe.
Hello.
We have George Mann.
Hello.
And on the telephone, Patricia H. Ash.
Hi.
There she is.
Hi.
Hello.
And of course, our producer, Alex Lefchu. And hopefully joining us very shortly on the phone will be Robin Pearce, all the way from Wales.
Sunny Wales, hopefully. Or freezing cold Wales. It's cold here, yeah. Lincolnshire.
And what an exciting show we've got for you.
That didn't sound very exciting, sir. Try that again. We'll cut that bit when we transmit it. Try that again.
What an exciting show we have for you today.
That's brilliant. Yes, better. Absolutely.
Yeah, much better.
Much. Can we spot
it? I am a little tired.
Never mind. Why is it so exciting, Sam?
Because I'm going to pass the audience over to George to tell us all about In This Month.
In This Month of May.
In This Month.
We're going to go right back to the mists of time, to one that I don't think any of you are going to guess.
Okay.
28 BC. May the 10th, in fact.
Okay.
28 BC.
Yeah, I think Patricia was just around then.
In ancient China, the Han Dynasty, astronomers spotted and observed for the first time and recorded in detail the first sunspot that was ever recorded in history.
Wow.
Early astronomy.
Sunspot. Cool.
28 BC.
28 BC.
BC.
Wow.
BC. Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah, so how did they record it? Do we know? Anybody know?
Oh, it was probably Betamax.
Yeah, there was no VHS in those
there
days.
There was no VHS.
Right, then, that had to be
it. Probably
no DVR.
A bit of artwork, maybe. Yeah. Short drawing.
Okay, so moving on. We're going to jump forward a little bit now to 450 years ago.
Right.
16th of May, 1568. Scotland. A young lady by the name of Mary, Queen of Scots, fled over the border into England to escape.
Right. Wow.
Right. Yes. So she went over that wall that was owned by Adrian.
Adrian's wall.
Adrian's wall. Into England. Okay. Was that because she didn't want devolution?
Yeah, must have been, yeah.
I think it was a protest.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's hard to imagine it's 450 years ago.
450 years ago.
I know.
I feel as though it is that long.
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
It's amazing.
200 years ago now.
I don't remember any of this.
200 years ago, 11th of May, 1818, a very famous theatre was founded in South London. Any guesses?
Theatre. The Globe Theatre? No, the Globe Theatre, 1818.
Think about pubs and EastEnders.
Oh, the Young Vic.
The Old Vic.
The Old Queen Vic.
Wow.
The Old Vic.
The Old Vic, yeah. Founded 200 years ago. On to films now, 70 years ago. So we're talking about, you know, quite an early film, I guess. Sir Laurence Olivier did Shakespeare's Hamlet, the first British film to win an Academy Award for Best Picture. So that was 1948.
Am I showing my age that I've probably seen that? And I've seen a lot of Laurence Olivier films.
I think I've seen that one as well, and you know, Sunday afternoon reruns and things.
Hamlet, the Alas, Poor Yorick with the skull?
Yes.
Yes.
And all of that kind of stuff.
Yes.
That's
I didn't... 70 years, wow, that really makes me feel old.
The next one will hit home as well. 41 years ago, a very famous film that's about to have a new instalment... was launched in May. Can you think about what that might be?
41 years ago,
1977.
Alien?
Star Wars.
Indeed, yeah, Star Wars. Yeah, 25th of May launched, and obviously we're getting the new instalment. I think on the 25th of May, in fact,
But they're only making one of it, aren't they?
Well, he's hired for three, though. That's what he's said recently.
Why is it called Solo, then?
you reeled me right in that one.
Right in there.
I should have seen that coming. So I've got one more for you.
Okay.
One more. Patricia might guess this one. 3 years ago today, or not today, but in May, 3 years ago, something launched. Something that...
changed the face.
Changed the face of public radio.
What would that,
any
what
guesses,
would that
Patricia?
Patricia?
That wasn't the Stone Tapes, was it?
It was!
It was
the Stone Tapes!
It was! You were there, Patricia.
I was.
You're listening to The Stone Tapes with Sam Stone, David J. Howe, Patricia H. Ash, George Mann and Robin Pierce. A show which sheds a little slice of geek sunshine into the ether.
There we go. Oh, wow. And we're still here, three years later.
I can't believe it.
And we're still here. Wow.
It doesn't feel like 3 years, does it? That's gone so quick.
Yeah.
Some might say it feels a lot longer.
So that's 36 then.
Because we missed 1 month. This is our 36th episode. And they're all available to listen on download, Fact Fans.
So,
go and seek them out.
So I wonder which one, where in the run I joined in.
I think, was it 2016 when George started? It was, wasn't it? I think we'd been going maybe 10 months, maybe. Was that about right?
Because you came on as a guest, and then we liked you so much.
I've never left.
You've never left.
Apart from the odd time where I've had to dip out for, travel
professional reasons.
Absolutely, yes. And these things happen, don't they?
Fantastic.
And haven't we had fun? Haven't we had we had guests and we've discussed 36 films and all the music.
That's right. Everything. Patricia, do you remember the gin swigging episode when we did a steampunk?
I remember that one fondly.
Gin in the studio.
Gin in the studio. Yes.
We need to reprise that.
We do.
I think probably our August one, because of course the steampunk convention comes to Lincoln in the August Bank Holiday weekend again. So maybe we need to do another steampunk.
Maybe we'll see what we can sort out. Maybe we'll have a tasting or something, and we'll see how Alex's taste buds are good on wines or spirits or something, and watch as the show slowly descends into utter chaos as the as the board is not being operated.
more anarchy than usual.
More anarchy than usual.
Patricia, we're going to come over to your corner. What are you going to review for us this month?
Oh, I'm going to review a really interesting anthology that I found in a local comic book shop. I'm not sure why they were selling it, but they were. And so I took it home and I read it, and it was all about lesbian supervillains. It's called Absolute Power, and it was really fantastic.
Wow. Tell us a little bit more. What can we expect from these stories?
There are all sorts of supervillains. There's all kinds of supervillains. Some of them are rated PG-13 because villains do evil things and, they get involved with each other or their nemesis.
So PG-13.
With superheroes sometimes. Yeah. So I would say PG-13.
So that's now the new rating, is it, for anything that's got sexual content in for YA? Is that right? I always thought it was older than that. I don't know.
I think everything that's PG-13 in the States tends to be a 15 over here, I think.
Oh, I see.
I think.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
That
sounds about right.
So what's kind of the basic idea then? Is it short stories, different ones with different villains?
Yeah,
it's
13 different short stories about all kinds of supervillains. There are computer hackers, there are mutants, there are super-powered mad scientists. There's all kinds of things, like people with magical powers and people with all kinds of different world-dominating plans. There's a cat burglar who can turn into a jaguar. There's kinds of stuff.
Wow. Mm. Any authors we'd heard of before?
I don't know. I would say that the most well-known author in this is probably Amerk Rustad, but they're kind of obscure, and the rest of them are even more obscure. But really, really talented. I enjoyed every single story in this.
So the quality of the writing's very good?
Yes, I would say very, very good.
Because this is from a press, I looked it up online, it's called Northwest Press, and they specialise in, what do we call this, GBLT kind of fiction?
Yep.
And all sorts of other...
They do.
LGBT,
and there's another
letter,
and I can't remember Q.
That's the one. they specialise in books in this genre, and it's edited by Erica Friedman, who again is quite a well-known commentator on this area. So it's very pleasing that the writing standard's way up there. They're obviously doing something very right.
Mm.
Sounds great. Yeah. A book of supervillains.
And this was actually sort of a sequel, because they came out with one called The Lavender Menace with a bunch of gay supervillains.
Oh, okay.
And that one went very well, and I'm sure it's just as amazing as this one is, because Absolute Power was even more amazing. I would say 10 out of 10 for sure.
Oh, wow.
That's impressive.
High recommendation.
So it's Absolute Power, Tales of Queer Villainy, edited by Erica
That's
Friedman and published by Northwest Press.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's available at all online booksellers near you.
And with that in mind, I think we'll have to have a little bit of Girls Just Want to Have Fun. Gotta love a bit of Cindy.
Oh,
she's amazing.
Those girls are having a lot of fun over there in the distance. There you go.
And welcome to Robin Pierce. Hi, Robin.
Good evening. How are you? Is that my new theme song?
That is. It can be.
I'm sure you'll get to hear our special new jingle later.
Make it so, he says, pulling down his
absolutely. But for now, what is it you're reviewing for us this month?
It can only be Avengers Infinity War.
Oh,
okay. Have we all seen it?
Yes.
No.
Oh.
No.
We haven't seen it yet.
But don't worry about that.
Oh.
You can give the spoilers. I don't mind.
I won't give spoilers because I don't want our listener to have it spoiled for
us. Oh, right. Well, we're not sure whether our listener has heard it or not, seen it or not.
Well, basically, in a nutshell, this is the jewel in the crown of the Marvel movie universe.
Wow.
It really is. I know that sounds like the over-enthusiastic ramblings of someone on Marvel's payroll.
How much did they pay you?
Let's just say that I saw it at the first screening at midnight and then went again.
Oh, wow.
So did you do that thing about going and hiding in the loos and then going back in again once it had started?
Not at a midnight screening, no.
Oh, no.
I don't want to spend all night in a certain cinema chain, however comfy their seating is.
Okay.
I'm going to keep it spoiler-free, just in case that, you know, there are those among us who haven't paid their part of the nearly 2 billion of the film's take as yet.
Wow.
Okay? The film picks up shortly after the end of Thor, Ragnarok.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you remember, the Asgardian survivors were on a spaceship when a larger, more threatening ship kind of looms into view, blocking their path.
Yes.
Well, that was Thanos' ship. And we pick up shortly after that, where Thanos, Josh Brolin, is setting into motion the plan that he's been working on since he sent the Chitauri our way in Avengers Assemble a few years ago.
No.
Well, maybe even longer, actually, because Nick Fury, at the end of Iron Man, did warn of impending threats in the Sting when he speaks to Tony Stark, who's just admitted to being Iron Man. Now, Thanos has a plan. Now, it's an insane plan, but the way he explains it, it kind of sort of makes sense. There's a logic to it. But, and I stress here before everybody thinks I'm a raving Nazi, he's doing completely the wrong thing for a reason that you can follow the logic of.
Mm.
His insane dream is to wipe out half of all life, everywhere.
Right.
To give the surviving half a chance at a better life with no threat of overpopulation and enough resources for all.
Okay.
Now, he's not even picking out, you know, we'll only pick the rich or the healthy. It's half of everybody gone.
Mm.
Okay.
But to achieve this, he needs 6 Infinity Stones, which are scattered all over the galaxy. And when you gather them all together and you put them in the Infinity Gauntlet, it'll give him absolutely limitless godlike power.
Oh.
So he can actually carry out his plan.
It's literally a click of the fingers, isn't it, Robin? That's the,
yeah,
the
thing.
And half the population of the entire universe is gone. That's his plan.
Okay. Okay.
Now, the Guardians of the Galaxy know about Thanos because Gamora and Nebula are his daughters, and he's killed Drax's family. But the Avengers, well, they're in disarray because they split up after Civil War, and, you know, they're basically factions working undercover. But they've never heard of Thanos, and they're completely unaware of the threats that's heading their way until his henchmen, the Dark Order, or the Children of Thanos, attack New York. Why is it always New York? Who knows? But basically, all
it's
hell
because,
breaks
because Godzilla's not there to see them off. I
mean, no, that would be
that's
Tokyo.
Obvious. I mean, you don't want really to go to Tokyo because Godzilla defends it. Anyway, go on, sorry. I'm breaking
anyway,
my train of thought.
All hell breaks loose in an all-out battle fought both off-planet and here on Earth, with alliances being formed between the Marvel superheroes across the entire franchise, except those owned by Fox, so don't be looking for Deadpool or the X-Men. the beauty is that all the featured characters get a reasonable amount of screen time, so fans of specific characters aren't shortchanged. So, you know, if you like Tom Holland as Spider-Man, you're going to get your share of Tom Holland. If you prefer Iron Man or Thor or the Guardians, everybody gets good screen time, and they're all meaningful. The humor comes thick and fast, the heroes exchange quips, the effects are absolutely outstanding. There are plenty of shocks and surprises along the way. Despite the fact that it's a big summer tentpole film about comic book superheroes, I find it to be really an emotional roller coaster. Mm. And in comparison to last year's Star Wars The Last Jedi, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, but here it is on the record, I would say it's easily the most satisfying film.
Wow.
Mm. That's it. I've just dissed Star Wars on the airwaves.
Right. Wow.
Now I feel dirty.
Wow.
I noticed that the audience for Jedi left the screening a little bit underwhelmed, and it was only afterwards, on reflection, that the film really resonated. But with this one, audiences are leaving the screening stunned at what they've seen, overwhelmed not by the spectacle, but the implications which will carry over to the next Avengers movie due next year.
Wow.
So it's a 10 all the way.
Wow. Robin, that is high praise, because I don't think you've ever given any film a 10
that
I know
of.
No, I'm very, very sparing with my 10s. But this is it.
George, you said you've seen it. What was your thoughts?
I thought it was fantastic. I really did. And I was I was worried, because going into it, knowing I'd seen an interview with Scarlett Johansson where she'd said there was something like 68 of the superheroes in it. And I thought,
wow,
God, how are they going to actually do this? How are they going to make it work? And they really did. Like Robin said, they really did. They all get the right screen time. They all have great character arcs. Josh Brolin is fantastic as Thanos.
I mean,
he's I'm looking forward to seeing him as Cable in Deadpool 2.
Yeah, me too. So I think for me, the only negative thing about the film is that by the end of it, I really, really, really needed a wee. Because it was so long.
And you didn't want to leave.
I didn't want to leave. but apart from that, you know, but it kept me there all the way. You know, I thought it was fantastic as well.
So basically, you're both saying that really you just couldn't get enough.
No. If they did a director's cut and added half an hour to it.
I just can't get enough.
Well, I don't think that really needs much of a back intro.
It's amazing. So I was going to say about the new Infinity War Avengers film. I actually have trouble remembering what happens in a TV series. So 1 week to the next. So if you watch like a 10-part TV series over 10 weeks, I struggle a little bit to remember who the characters and where we are. But like, it's Infinity War is kind of the climax of a 10-year sort of film series of all these different characters. And when Robin, you were saying, oh, but at the end of Iron Man, he infers that such and such. I'm going, what?
I can't remember.
I mean, what's that? Like 1993? Like, I can't remember.
I think it might be worthwhile that we actually have to binge watch them all before we see Infinity.
Does that mean we have to watch Hulk again?
No,
yeah, you didn't.
I don't think
that
you
need
one, to. Well, if you watch the one, the second one, don't watch the one with Eric Bana because it's not in this continuity.
Right. Okay.
Of course. No, because it's David Banner is the one that's...
No, it's still Bruce Banner.
And Bruce Banner.
David Banner was in the...
It was David... what's his name?
Baranis?
He's on about the actor in the Ang Lee film.
Edward Furlong. No.
Norton.
Edward Norton.
Norton.
I can't remember.
Edward Norton.
Sorry, Edward Furlong was the kid in Terminator.
But, if you look at it, though, as a film series, and you don't take these as individual films... It is quite an extraordinary legacy, really, isn't it? And a result here to actually create a film series where each, even a film like from 10 years ago can reference something that you're doing now. And I know it all comes from the comic books, and I don't know, but I assume that this is kind of what the comic books did as
inspired
well.
By. But I think it's
Marvel comic books always did overlap more than DC did.
I mean,
they were all in the same universe.
I was just going to say, they were all always obviously in the same universe.
Yes.
Yeah, they were all working out of New York rather than fictitious American cities dotted over a fictitious America.
Yes. Is there some sort of record being made here? I mean, there's obviously long-running film series that have been before. I mean, I think of like kind of carry-on films or what have you, you know?
Yeah, but they weren't. There was no continuity.
There's not really any continuity between
them. I do believe that the longest film series in history is still Toho's Godzilla, with, I believe, now 30 movies.
Wow. That's going some, isn't it? But this is a pretty good result, I
think. What's really interesting is they've managed to transplant... I don't think any of us realised at first that this is what they were doing, but they've transplanted the comic book model onto the screen.
Yes.
And it wasn't just a case of making movies based on those properties. They've actually taken that whole idea of sub-series of film, like you have comics, and then you get that crossover element, and the Avengers being a team of those heroes who also have their individual films, and all of that.
So we've kind of got Avengers Infinity War featuring Iron Man. Because it's like they're not going to do the Iron Man comic anymore, but they're going to put Iron Man into other series.
Are they not doing Iron Man?
No, it's what they used to do in the comic series. You know, that they would start off with, I don't know, Spider-Man and Fantastic Four, and then they'd fold Spider-Man, and you'd have Fantastic Four featuring Spider-Man. And comic books would keep joining together and changing.
And then breaking apart.
And then breaking
again.
Apart.
Yeah,
and
breaking apart.
And all this kind of. So we had Iron Man 1, 2, and 3, was it? Did we have an Iron Man 4?
No.
Not yet.
No.
And yet we've got Iron Man now in these other films.
Yeah, you've basically had a trilogy for some of the core characters. So you've had 3 Captain America movies, you've had 3 Iron Man movies, 3 Thor movies. Mm. And I'd be surprised, actually, if beyond Avengers 4 that those characters continue. I think they'll... You know,
no, this is the end of this particular run. They're not going to go any further with this. It's the end. Avengers next year, the fourth one, will be the end of this.
Mm.
And what happens in these two films will basically be canon as far as the movie universe is concerned. So if anybody were to shuffle off this mortal coil in either of these films, then they will remain having shuffled off the mortal coil, according to Marvel and Disney and the Russo brothers, and any films featuring them will have had to take place before the events of Infinity War.
Okay.
Right.
And the other thing that I was intrigued by when you were giving the rundown there, Robin, was this gauntlet with these 6 gems that if you collect them all together, you have ultimate power.
Yes.
Who made this thing in the first place?
The gauntlet.
Whose bright idea was it to create something that could effectively wipe out the entire universe?
It's the same guy that made Thor's hammer.
Oh.
And he's a dwarf giant.
Okay.
What?
Yes.
Yeah. Peter Dinklage.
That's an oxymoron, isn't it?
Peter Dinklage.
Okay.
As a dwarf giant. And, of course, he saw Mjolnir, the Thor hammer, shattered in Ragnarok. But he now gets a kind of a battle axe kind of thing.
Okay. I see.
For the Stormbringer.
So why doesn't Thanos just go to Peter Dinklage and say, hey, dude, could you make me another gauntlet?
Well, it's well, the stones he needs.
He's got his gauntlet. There is a spare one. But,
well, of course.
But
he actually did
visit, you know, Peter Dinklage's character and also cut off his hands.
Oh.
So he couldn't make any more.
That's not very pleasant, is it?
Well, no, I mean, how do you eat? Well, I suppose you can eat, but, you know. Yeah. There are other bits of business that you can't really do.
That's not very good, is it?
How do you point at somebody?
Oh. Didn't really think that through, did they? Yeah, but no, that's excellent.
It's about finding the stones that to activate the gauntlet is the thing, because they were forged as part of the Big Bang. And they're all...
Alistair Sheldon had them. In his collection.
Probably.
Bazinga.
Bazinga. Yeah, sorry about that. Sorry. I do skip through these things, don't we?
Too thin, and maybe happy, but tired. This is Chase Masterson, founder of the Pop Culture Hero Coalition, the first ever organization to make a stand against bullying, racism, misogyny, LGBT bullying, cyberbullying, and other forms of hate using pop culture stories that we love. We all love superheroes. Why not be one? Check out our website at www.popcultureherocoalition.org. Follow us on Facebook at Pop Culture Hero Coalition and on Twitter at @superheroIRL. Thanks so much.
You're listening to The Stone Tapes with Sam Stone, David J. Howe, Patricia H. Ash, George Mann, and Robin Pierce. A show which sheds a little slice of geek sunshine into the ether.
In dreams he came.
What did you think of that, Robin?
Oh, I love it. Geek sunshine into the sunshine. Ether, I love it.
Walking on sunshine. We'll have that next time. Okay.
Well, little bit of a back intro here, Visions of China from Japan.
Oh, fabulous
great song.
I said, so in the middle of that, it's one of the great drum breaks in history, in the middle of that track. Absolutely love it. So anyway, sorry, I'll be quiet.
Going back to shows, superheroes, and maybe antiheroes, we were talking about Lucifer as one of our favourite shows, and horrifically, it's just been cancelled.
Such a shame, isn't it? He's also based on DC Comic, of course.
Yeah. Oh, I absolutely love Lucifer. Tom Ellis playing the lead character. And he was like made for it.
Yeah.
He's absolutely, you know, brilliant as this kind of very confident, overconfident, smart-talking king of the underworld.
Did you read the comics?
I've not read the comics, no. I mean, I've read some of the Sandman comics where he's, you know, appears, but... I love the show. I'm about halfway through season two, and for me, it's brilliant in its own right. But for me, it's also kind of the best audition for Doctor Who I've ever seen, because Tom Ellis would be perfect for Doctor Who.
It's a very, very
we can but dream.
It's a very strong performance, and I think a lot of the other characters are very strong as well. Is it Patricia Helfer?
Yes, she was in Battlestar Galactica, the reboot, of course.
Yes, yeah, she's the mum, isn't she?
And the lady who plays the psychiatrist, I think, is very good.
I can't think of her name, but she's excellent. She's absolutely excellent.
The one that we think is quite weak in Lucifer, strangely, is the lead...
Chloe.
Lauren German, I think, is the actress's name.
I'm quite taken with her, to be honest.
we won't go any further on that one.
I think it must be quite hard playing opposite Tom Ellis, to be honest.
I think it's in season three, which you're not quite at, that she seems to be less important, and the performance does seem a little bit flat. And it's almost like, well, she's almost a little bit superfluous, I think, in the beginning of season three. But she's coming back into it as more episodes we've watched.
Have you seen Lucifer, Robin?
I haven't seen a single episode, and now I feel like I'm missing out.
It's very good. It's very, very good. And another good thing that we saw was season one of the Frankenstein Chronicles.
Yes, Frankenstein Chronicles. Have you seen that,
George? Not seen that one. Is that the Sean Bean?
Sean Bean one, yes, which we very much enjoyed. And season two's just started and we're really not sure again.
It's a bit tricky.
It seems to have lost the plot, quite literally, which is a bit unfortunate.
It's very strange.
It is very strange.
Yeah. It's funny how they do that.
What else are we going through? Lost in Space, of course, we thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah, have you seen...
Just watched the first episode and really, really enjoyed it.
And what was it we watched recently? Oh, Monkey.
Monkey.
I'm the really showing my age. Monkey. Robin, you know about Monkey, don't you?
It's the classic
Hang
Monkey.
On a second. No, why you did say I'm really showing my age? Robin, you know about this.
Because, Robin, you know about everything.
You know about everything.
You see? You know about everything.
You see, now the original series of Monkey, I never got on with. I was a Water Margin fan.
I was too.
More serious. And I just thought Monkey was silly. It was just silly. But I really enjoyed this new series.
I think Water Margin I probably watched first, and then when Monkey came on,
that was the order.
More of the age group that I was at the time. I should have been watching rather than the Water Margin, which was quite violent and full of lots of things happening to poor women. And
we very, very much enjoyed that, and Into the Badlands we're enjoying.
Yeah, have you seen that one?
No,
that's on Prime.
There's so much good stuff. I'm still watching iZombie, which just been renewed for series 6 as well.
Oh,
so really happy about that.
Yeah, that's amazing.
What's your shows at the moment, Robin?
Well, I'm just catching up with Mr. Robot.
Oh, right. Ah.
What an amazing show. I was in a high street retailer of DVDs last week.
I mean, there are still such things.
There are still such
Good
things.
Lord.
This is the one that has a dog looking quizzically at an old man.
Oh, that one. Yes, yes.
And the box set of the first two seasons was going pretty cheap, and I believe it's still on. And I thought, ooh, hacking and stuff like that. But it's really, really intense.
I think we really enjoyed season one, and again felt that season two kind of dropped it a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know. We just couldn't get into
season two. Into
Isn't the same guy who plays the hacker in this now playing Freddie Mercury in that biopic?
That I don't know.
It's very possible. I've also seen him as something else recently, and I can't think what it was. And he was excellent in it. He's good. He's really good. There's no. Yeah.
And of course, we've got Christian Slater in it as well. Mm. I just thought it, you know, with even the blurb to season one, that democracy has been hacked, I found that really intriguing.
Yeah. We very much enjoyed that. And of course, we're loving Plebs, which is not really. Not really.
Bit of light relief.
although, you know, a comedy set in the Roman times to reggae music is kind of fairly surreal.
So what have you been watching recently, George?
A couple of things. There's a TV series called Black Lightning, which is a superhero, a DC one again. Which
That's on our to-watch list.
It's a little bit darker, a little bit more adult than than Supergirl or Arrow or something. But really good, kind of issue-based stuff. So I'm really, really enjoying that. And the other thing I've watched recently was that new film that's just come out, Anon. Which has went straight to streaming services.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
I think it's on at some cinemas as well. It's Clive Owen and Amanda Seyfried.
Oh.
And it's like a crime drama, I suppose, really, about if people, you know, everyone's eyesight is kind of digitized now, so they get like wiki entry stuff essentially when they look at something.
Oh, right. It gives and then you all the information.
Yeah,
right.
And the information scrolls up.
It's a very SF,
everyone's on the grid, and it's about a person who's not on the grid and who can hack people's point of view. So that suddenly they see what she's seeing, and she murders them. And he's a cop trying to track her down. And it's cleverly done. It's very stylish, very noir. Mm. So I recommend that. That's on the streaming services.
Sounds good.
So we're not. I'm writing these down.
Yeah,
any others? Anything else you've been watching that we might have missed?
Oh, blimey.
we saw a great little zombie film called Eat Locals.
Oh, well, it was a vampire film.
Vampire, it's not zombie, it was a vampire. That's right, it was a vampire film called Eat Locals, which was great fun, with Eve Miles in it.
Yeah, they had the guy that was Vincent in Doctor Who, and he's called, you know his name?
He's gone from my brain. Him.
And the wonderful Annette Crosby in it. She was amazing in it.
Yes.
That sounds fun.
Eve Miles was fabulous.
It was fun.
And Freema Agyeman.
Yes.
All right.
So quite a cast, actually, isn't it? That's good.
Your mama's back.
Going to whip it right over to David's film of the month.
Well done, darling.
We're full of those today.
Fantastic. That was perfect.
That's perfect. So whipping it completely, of course, is one of the classic superheroes, Superman. And we thought, or I thought, that it might be quite interesting on the, obviously, the verge of seeing Infinity War, the latest kind of superhero film, to go back and actually have a quick look at the very first feature-length superhero film. And according to Wikipedia, it is Superman and the Mole Men from 1950-51. Now, absolutely fascinating little film. We managed to find it on one of those online streaming services, which was good. But it's available on box sets. And also, I believe you've got the box sets, haven't you, Robin?
Yes, I do.
Yep. So Superman and the Mole Men, it's black and white. George Reeves stars as Superman. And it's 58 minutes long, but I think Sam thought it was more like 358
minutes.
Yeah, it went on a bit. according to this, independently produced, based, of course, on Superman from DC Comics. Although I was kind of interested in the credits to see that it didn't say DC Comics. It said Action Comics, and so you probably
that's
know
right.
exactly what it was, Robin.
Yeah, National Periodicals is what they were called.
Yeah,
that's right.
So way back in the day, it was all different.
Yeah. Before even my day.
Before even your day. Phyllis Coates starred as Lois Lane, and she was a bit of a wet blanket.
But there was a moment where she was fighting for a corner, and I was quite impressed at that
was.
Moment.
Like, well, hey, actually, look, Phyllis Coates only lasted two seasons. They replaced her with Noelle Neal, who was Lois Lane in the movie serials with Kirk Allen in the 1940s, because they felt that Phyllis Coates would play the role a bit abrasively, and she's a bit too unkind to Clark Kent. Noel Neal was far kinder.
Poor Clark. So, other people in this film: Jeff Corey, Walter Reed, J. Farrell McDonald, Stanley Andrews as the sheriff, and a variety of other people. I have to say, I actually quite enjoyed the film. It's a bit crazy. It's like Clark Kent and Lois Lane go to apparently do a news story on the deepest bore shaft in the world, which happens to be in America, of course.
Where else?
And it seems to have been capped off with a very small metal cap.
It's quite amusing, isn't it?
It's quite amusing, like a trap door. And then this trap door opens one night, and these old aged midgets, little people, start to come out. And it's all a bit bizarre because I kept being reminded of Doctor Who Inferno, where they drill into the earth and these primal creatures get created. We've got hairy hands, and these little guys have got hairy hands in it. And then there's another scene in it where they're looking through a window, and it is absolutely shot for shot the same as the Sensorites from Doctor Who. I even put that on Facebook, and I was like, this is the same as the Sensorites.
Well, somebody from Doctor Who obviously ripped it
obviously
off
watched it, because this was 1950. Doctor Who Sensorites was 1964. So these little guys come out and for no particular reason go running around. one of them gets kind of hit by a car or a bus or something and ends up in hospital, and of course they can't make sense of it. So there's a bunch of evil guys who want to string them up for some reason, and Superman comes and saves the day by kind of saying, you mustn't do that, that's a bad thing.
There's one nutcase that's running around with a gun. I remember
there's
that.
There's a nutcase running around with
burning
a gun.
Burning things.
And then some more come out with a big gun thing that they're going to kind of try and rescue their other pal from the hospital with. It's great fun. Superman's barely in it.
That's true.
But it's a kind of quite a fun little run around, really. And the makeup on these little guys is great. We kept watching and saying they move like they're children.
They move definitely. I think
it
was children.
But they look like old men.
But they've made
so. I'm not quite sure whether it's very clever makeup or if they're actually older people who are
There's one of them that was running along, and he was like,
"How they done it?"
They had like romper suits on. So there's one of them running along, and I swear he's wearing a nappy. So I'm sure it's weird.
Well, like a little, could be either way, though, couldn't it?
No idea.
It was an invasion of mole men, and there's three of them.
Yeah, but however they decided to do it, it all kind of worked quite well. So I quite enjoyed it. I thought, as the first ever superhero film, the flying effects are great. There's one very, very brief animation shot of Superman kind of flying across a dam save one of these creatures that's fallen off a dam. But mostly you just see the camera sort of going across the ground, sort of Superman's point of view. So you just see the ground going past fire.
Okay.
It's kind of quite good, you know, given all the limitations. What's your feeling, Robin?
How Superman's chest is completely flat when he flies. I mean, what they did then, they didn't use wires. That came later for the series. But they actually had him lying on a glass table.
I see.
With the
so
sky moving behind him.
Chest.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So
I like this. It's kind of quaint. It is. Very endearing about it.
And I always like trying to go back and see some of the earlier films as well as the more recent ones and stuff like that. So it's good to give a little bit of coverage. So Superman and the Mole Men. Fantastic. On a digital streaming service, if you Google it, you'll probably find it. Great fun. Great fun. Worth a watch, I think.
It'd be interesting to hear, you know, when you watch the next Superman, Man of Steel 2, if Robin comes on and says, and like they said at the end of Superman and the Mole Men, this has come true now. And, you know, actually, they've beaten
Marvel. That would be impressive.
And with that, that's all we've got time for. Thanks so much to George Mann, David J. Howe, Patricia H. Ash, Robin Pierce, and of course our producer, Alex Leftchew. Until next time, say goodbye, gang.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.